Thanks for listening to the best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
So I hope you're not too triggered. We're playing Baby It's Cold Outside. Evidently, this is getting banned on some radio stations, and I just said we got to play Christmas music between now and then. So we're going to try to play this song every single day between now and then to fight back against song censorship. Welcome back. This is crazy, by the way. That song, this song that you're listening to right now, left-wingers have become triggered by it, and they're banning it because they think it's what, like too rapey? I swear to God, I can't even keep up with
things. Yes, anymore. They think it's sexist in a way because he's bossing her around in the song.
Did you hear about that? People are like upset about Rudolph and like Frosty the Snowman and stuff. Like, imagine watching Rudolph, or I think it was like the Charlie Brown Christmas special or whatever it was. I think there was a Thanksgiving special, and finding it problematic. Like, if you don't like something that's made for kids, don't watch it. If you hear "Baby, It's Cold Outside" and you're like, "I don't think we can play this anymore. This is problematic. You need to get a life." I saw the other day where at Columbia University they had a Saturday Night Live guy doing jokes, and they shut down this guy's performance. He was the first Indian writer, I think, for Saturday Night Live in history. So he's a minority comedian. And they found his jokes to be unacceptable at Columbia, and so the college kids shut down the performance. And I'm thinking to myself, it used to be college kids would rally in favor of the First Amendment. And now college kids are rallying in favor against comedians who make jokes that make them uncomfortable. Like, it's a freaking comedian. His goal is to make you laugh. And you're triggered because you're like, oh, that joke is so unacceptable. If you don't like the joke, don't laugh. Don't go
soft.
See the comedian.
So soft. I say we keep it hard on this show and have Ice Cube as a guest.
Well, that's happening tomorrow.
Yay.
Welcome back, Geico Outkick Studios. We're brought to you by MyBookie.net. We're getting close to the playoffs, and it's time to get in on the action. With MyBookie.net, use promo code CLAY when you register for your account and get a 100% sign-up bonus. No deposit necessary. Terms and conditions apply. For entertainment purposes only. Void where prohibited. I said that some of you may consider my opinion here genius. Others of you may consider me to be an idiot. That's what happens oftentimes with brilliant ideas. It's so close to the line of idiocy, and it's so mind-blowing that you don't know how to respond. Obviously, I think it's genius. If I was Dan Snyder, I would sign Colin Kaepernick right now. I would also add Kareem Hunt, and I would say that the Washington Redskins are a team that believes in second chances, and I would be using Colin Kaepernick's signing to allow me to sign Kareem Hunt, who I think could be a good running back in this league for the next 4, 5, 6 years because he's so young. And meanwhile, I also think Reuben Foster could be a really good linebacker for the next 4, 5, or 6 years. Neither of those guys cost me hardly anything. And in the meantime, I get to see whether or not Colin Kaepernick has anything left and become a absolute just primo star on the left-wing social media and sports media stratosphere. Because they'd be like, Dan Snyder, what a brave man to go sign Colin Kaepernick. And nobody would notice that I was also bringing in a couple of other guys that otherwise I would get ripped for, and I'm using Colin Kaepernick as the cover to do it. Genius or stupidity? Travis in Nashville, what's up? What do you think?
Hey, man. I want to say I absolutely agree with you. I believe that it is so genius that it's a no-brainer.
Yep.
And while you're at it, you can also bring in Michael Vick as a comeback consultant.
Thanks for the call. I like Michael Vick. I don't know. I think Michael Vick is working as an offensive coordinator somewhere, isn't he? But he had some interesting quotes about Lamar Jackson the other day that I thought were intriguing as Lamar Jackson got ready to go play against his old team, the Atlanta Falcons. So Travis in Nashville thinks I'm a genius. Luke in Iowa, genius or idiot?
I don't agree with this personally, just because is it really worth the attention for a quarterback who's sat out for 2 years that was an okay quarterback.
But what do you, I understand? I understand that argument, but what do you lose?
What do you lose? I guess you don't lose anything.
Yeah, so that's my argument. Risk and reward. I see no risk here because everybody assumes already that Colin Kaepernick is awful and that he's not going to do well. And so if you bring him in and he's awful and he doesn't do well, well, your team's already shot anyway. It's not like Mark Sanchez is leading you into the playoffs and you give Colin Kaepernick an opportunity. Maybe he plays great and you use him next year because you got two guys with broken legs that you don't think are going to be able to come back at the start of the season. And you go draft a quarterback and it takes the pressure off your first round quarterback. Because you have an easy out with Kaepernick if you sign him for four games. You have him for a month on the team. If he doesn't pan out, you just let him go. I'm all about analyzing risk-reward. And we're going to continue to take calls on this, and I want you guys to tell me, genius or idiot? 877-996-6369. Am I a genius here or am I an idiot? Keith in Greensboro, North Carolina. What's up, Keith?
Absolute genius. One thing you failed to mention, possibly intentionally, is well, Foster and Hunt would work out well. Kaepernick, you could prove that coming back after 2 years, impossible. He would fall on his face and just go away forever, never to be heard from again.
Yeah, which is, if you were Dan Snyder and you didn't believe in Colin Kaepernick, you're giving him an opportunity, but you're putting that Colin Kaepernick is a really good quarterback. Either you're proving that he can still play or you're putting to bed the idea that he's a really good quarterback. And you risk nothing. But maybe you think I'm an idiot for this. 877-996-6369. This is Outkick on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Live for the Geico Outkick Studios, where 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. Visit geico.com for a free rate quote. And it's never a good look when you untuck a long, bulky dress shirt. That's why Untuck It makes shirts specifically designed to be worn untucked. Go to untuckit.com to see the new fall arrivals. Untuckit.com, your solution to perfecting casual. Use promo code CLAY, that's C-L-A-Y, for 20% off savings. All right, so here is my potentially brilliant, potentially insane, potentially genius, potentially idiocy idea. If you're just waking up across the country, I teased this a little bit yesterday in hour three. I believe that Kareem Hunt, notwithstanding that video, has a future in the NFL. I think he's not going to play for the rest of this year. I think he'll be back next year. I think that video is bad. It's nowhere near the Ray Rice video. It is not domestic violence. This is an important distinction that most people out there are too dumb to understand, or they're just hopping on the soapbox to make a big argument. Domestic violence requires some sort of intimate relationship between the victim and the man who is abusing her. Typically, it requires that she be a mother, that she be a girlfriend, that she be a wife, that there is a long-term relationship between the man and the woman who is abusing her. Kareem Hunt did not perform or behave in an admirable manner in that video. He may be guilty of assault or battery, but he had only known that woman for like 3 hours. It was a violent act, but it's not domestic violence. Domestic violence requires a relationship. This is like a bar fight, basically. And the truth of the matter is this: if that were not a woman, if that were a man, and in fact, if Kareem Hunt had just shoved that guy, if you watch that video, and then the girl had gotten shoved too, and he hadn't then followed over and kicked her when she was on the ground, then there would be no story here at all. Because he could be like, I was trying to shove the guy, and the girl got caught into it. It was just a kind of a melee in a hallway, in a brawl type situation. It was stupid. Should have never done it. But it wasn't me trying to be intentionally violent against the woman. it was the kick that ended Kareem Hunt's season with the Kansas City Chiefs and ended his career with them as well. It wasn't the shove. But regardless, this, a lot of people are like, oh, this is just like Ray Rice. No, this is not really that similar to Ray Rice, because Ray Rice was behaving violently against his fiance that later became his wife. The other aspect of this is Ray Rice was on the tail end of his career. Kareem Hunt is still early in his career. Ray Rice's problems exceeded his talents when that video went public. For Kareem Hunt, his talent still exceeds his problems. So I think Kareem Hunt will play in the NFL again. Joe Mixon broke a woman's face in multiple places. He's a running back for the Cincinnati Bengals right now. Tyreek Hill on the same Kansas City Chiefs team choked and strangled his pregnant girlfriend while he was in college, and he's never missed an NFL game at all. There are a lot of dudes in the NFL who are not saints. Kareem Hunt's not perfect. I think he's eventually going to be in the NFL. The Washington Redskins have already signed Reuben Foster, and they got absolutely ripped. Dan Snyder got dragged over the coals for his decision to sign Reuben Foster in the wake of yet another domestic violence allegation. That is domestic violence, because Reuben Foster's allegations are against a woman that he's had a long-term relationship with. So that, in fact, is domestic violence. But the Redskins said, we did an investigation. We don't necessarily believe that this woman is telling the truth, basically, because she has a history of lying to police in the past. So we don't really know what's going on there. But the Redskins were willing to take a big risk, to take a big dose of social criticism from across the landscape when they signed Reuben Foster. Interestingly, that criticism also came on ESPN Monday Night Football. If you watched on Monday Night Football when the Redskins were playing against the Eagles, there was a huge amount of discussion live in the fourth quarter with Joe Tessitore, Jason Witten, and Booger McFarland all weighing in on that punishment of the of Reuben Foster and whether or not he should be signed by the Redskins. Interestingly, and maybe this is just a coincidence, you know what didn't get mentioned when Jason Witten and those guys were talking about this? Greg Hardy. And the fact that Jason Witten was a teammate of Greg Hardy, who had his own domestic violence incident and was signed by the Dallas Cowboys. Now, here is a little bit of a conspiracy theory for you. Do you know why ESPN might not have mentioned Greg Hardy with Jason Witten and Booger McFarland on that Monday Night Football discussion? If Jason Witten's going to get on his perch and say, hey, you know what, I don't think the Washington Redskins should have ever signed Reuben Foster, that's his opinion. He's entirely entitled to it. But a legitimate discussion that should have ensued is Jason Witten should have also been asked, wait a minute, why didn't you have that same objection when the Dallas Cowboys, your team, signed Greg Hardy? I think Jason Witten was not treated very fairly here, because you know why I don't think ESPN followed up and asked him about that? Because ESPN is promoting Greg Hardy to sign up for the UFC as part of their ESPN Plus coverage. You want a little conspiracy theory there? I think that's why they didn't mention Greg Hardy on Monday Night Football, because ESPN right now is advertising for everybody to sign up for ESPN Plus so they can watch Greg Hardy in the latest UFC fight. Remember, ESPN just signed with the UFC, and in fact, their headline on ESPN.com was former NFL player Greg Hardy, quote, will make his UFC debut in January, where he faces Alan Crowder in Brooklyn. The January 19th UFC fight night will be on ESPN Plus and will mark the first live event of a five-year deal between UFC and ESPN. Isn't that awfully interesting when they're talking about domestic violence and they're all teeing off on Reuben Foster and how they can't believe that the Washington Redskins would sign Reuben Foster? ESPN, through their deal with the UFC, is giving Greg Hardy a ton of money. Well, hell, ESPN just signed Greg Hardy, basically, to put on a fight. If you're so opposed to Reuben Foster making a living, shouldn't you also hold yourself to the same standard and not be promoting Greg Hardy as a UFC fighter? That's something to think about. That little bell of recognition going off in your head right now, that's called hypocrisy. Oh, ESPN's going to rip Dan Snyder to the high heavens because he has the gall to sign Reuben Foster. But wait a minute. They're telling everybody to sign up for ESPN Plus so they can come watch Greg Hardy compete in his first ever UFC fight? Awfully interesting that they didn't ask Jason Witten live on air about Greg Hardy. ESPN's doing the same thing that they're mad about the Washington Redskins doing. All right, but this is all part of my master plan. What I like to do is I like to see a time when an asset is all beaten down and everybody's saying there's no value there and the risk has gotten so low that the reward skyrockets. That's what businessmen do. And I fancy myself as a businessman. Got to think like an owner if you ever want to own anything. So I always say, get mental reps for decisions that you don't have to make yourself yet. That's how you become, I think, an elite decision maker and business owner. You got to think like the owner of the business, even if you're a low-level employee. Figure out how to make your boss more money, and you will make more money. Most employees don't do that. So train your mind to think like an owner, not like an employee. Put yourself in the situation of an owner all the time and say, if I owned this company, what would I do? And you will, I believe, if you can train your mind to think like an owner, not like an employee, eventually become an owner yourself. And a big part of thinking like an owner is thinking big picture, analyzing risk and reward, figuring out if you can find an asset where other people don't, finding the proverbial diamond in the rough. The Washington Redskins signed Reuben Foster because they believe that his talent exceeds his problems, and they were willing to take all of the slings and arrows of media outrage in order to do so. What's the best way to counter media outrage? Finding media praise. Right? Simple equation. If you have a choice between, if you are a business owner, between being praised by the media and the public or being ripped to the high heavens, I don't mind either, right? Sometimes people are like, oh, Clay Travis is a genius. Sometimes people are like, oh, Clay Travis is an idiot. I can't stand that guy, Clay Travis. Oh, that guy, Clay Travis, is the smartest guy on the planet. Truth is somewhere in between. I personally think I'm closer to the smartest guy on the planet than the dumbest guy on the planet, but you might disagree. And you might change your mind based on segments. Maybe 1 minute you're like, ah, damn, that Clay Travis, he's genius. Next minute you'll be like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. That's part of being comfortable with taking arguments and considering perspectives that other people won't. Some people think it's genius. Some people think it's idiocy. That's the calls right now that we're about to take. 877-996-6369. But my decision here is if I'm the Washington Redskins, I got two quarterbacks with broken legs. Mark Sanchez right now is my starting quarterback. I have lost Colt McCoy for potentially a long time with a broken leg. I have lost Alex Smith potentially for a long time with a broken leg. My team has fallen to 6-6. We virtually have lost our chance to make the playoff as we've lost three in a row. Our offense can't do anything. We ran 31 plays for 89 yards with Mark Sanchez. The only big play we had against the Philadelphia Eagles was the 90-yard run from 33-year-old running back Adrian Peterson. Now, if you feel like Adrian Peterson's going to go for 90 every game and he can be the warhorse, good for you. I don't. I also don't think Mark Sanchez is going to be any good at the quarterback position. So, right now, you've already signed Reuben Foster. Kareem Hunt is out there, went through waivers. Anybody could sign him. I would sign Kareem Hunt. If I were an NFL owner right now, watching the video, looking at risk-reward, I'd take all the social condemnation. I would go sign Kareem Hunt. But if you've already signed Reuben Foster, you can't sign Kareem Hunt probably if you're the Washington Redskins without just getting doused in outrage if you're Dan Snyder. How could you sign Kareem Hunt, and how could you wipe out all the outrage that you created for Reuben Foster in one fell swoop? You sign Colin Kaepernick. If you sign Colin Kaepernick, he's soaking up all of the oxygen, all of the attention. Everybody is looking at you and saying, my God, I can't believe Dan Snyder signed Colin Kaepernick. And people are not even going to notice that you've signed Reuben Foster and Kareem Hunt. You're going to get so much praise from the left-wing sports media and all the social justice warriors out there that you're going to be able to sneak in Reuben Foster and Kareem Hunt, and nobody's going to spend all the time condemning you. Yeah, some people out there probably write articles and say, well, Colin Kaepernick's really not the same thing as Kareem Hunt and Reuben Foster, and that's true. But he is the same thing in that he's an incredibly undervalued asset right now that offers you virtually no risk. If Reuben Foster gets arrested again, the Redskins just cut him. If Kareem Hunt puts himself into a bad position, the Redskins just cut him. If Colin Kaepernick comes to your team for the final four games of the season, plays in football games, and is awful, at the end of the year, you just let him leave. There is no risk. But what if Kareem Hunt turns into one of the best running backs in the league, which he very well might be, over the next 5 years? You got him for no cost. What if Reuben Foster turns into one of the best young linebackers in the league, which he might well be? You got him for no cost. What if Colin Kaepernick has still got 3 or 4 years of being a decent quarterback left in his repertoire? You got him. Alex Smith's coming back from a broken leg. He may never play at a high level again. Colt McCoy might not be good enough, period. Even if Colin Kaepernick is bad, is he going to be worse than Mark Sanchez? This is a no-risk, high-reward on all three guys. Plus, if you're Dan Snyder, you go from social pariah, who has been being ripped in the Washington, D.C. media for 20 years as the worst owner in sports, into the NAACP Man of the Year in one fell swoop. Dan Snyder going to be up there on the dais taking the NAACP Man of the Year award if he signs Colin Kaepernick and says, you know what? Ultimately, I believe that in football, we believe that all that matters is your talent. I think Colin Kaepernick had talent. If he turns into a good quarterback, you look like a genius because it's hard to find good quarterbacks in the league. If he stinks, you cut him at the end of the year. You only had him on the roster for a month, but nobody can ever accuse you of being a guy who is not a good owner, probably for the rest of your career. When Dan Snyder dies in his obituary, it would say, Dan Snyder, comma, who signed Colin Kaepernick. I'm telling you, this is the way the media works. Trust me, I know I'm a part of them. That's why I can play him. That's why I can play him like a fiddle. Dan Snyder, comma, who bought the Washington Redskins and allowed Colin Kaepernick to recommence his career as a member of the Washington Redskins, comma, died yesterday. Literally first sentence in his bio, the way the media thinks. Dan Snyder, from awful owner to human rights icon in the space of a minute. And, by the way, he's sneaking in Kareem Hunt and Reuben Foster for virtually no cost. Tell me this is not genius. You may be listening, you might be thinking, man, you know what? Initially, I thought Clay Travis was an idiot with this argument. He's kind of got me convinced. Or maybe you still think I'm an idiot. We're going to take your calls. 877-996-6369. I am Clay Travis. Genius or idiot. Depends on what the callers think. I put up a poll question. Poll question is up. You can find me on Twitter at Clay Travis. I said, in the wake of Alex Smith and Colt McCoy breaking their legs, is my idea that the Redskins should sign Colin Kaepernick for the rest of the year while also adding Reuben Foster and Kareem Hunt, which the media would ignore to praise the signing of Kaepernick, genius or idiocy? Nearly 3,000 of you have voted so far. 61% of you say that I'm a genius. And by the way, if Colin Kaepernick doesn't want to play, I still convey a public offer that we want to sign him. I want everybody to know that I tried to sign Colin Kaepernick and that I offered him several million dollars to do it. Boom. Dan Snyder, man of the year. That's what I would do if I was the owner. Clay Travis, I'd be walking up on the stage, waving to everybody, accepting the NAACP award. Meanwhile, I got Kareem Hunt, Reuben Foster for no cost. Nobody's even noticing that I have made the steal of the decade in the NFL. Think about it. Genius or idiocy. 877-996-6369. This is Outkick the Coverage on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Welcome back, Geico Outkick Studios. And it's never a good look when you untuck a long, bulky dress shirt. That's why Untuck It makes shirts specifically designed to be worn untucked. Go to untuckit.com to see the new fall arrivals. Untuckit.com, your solution to perfecting casual. Use promo code CLAY for 20% savings. Is that Rudolph there? Rudolph's now, like, really under fire. The Rudolph show. People are all triggered because Rudolph's dad is really bossy. Have you seen this? I mean, can you imagine watching Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and finding it problematic? Get a life, you pussy willows. Let's bring in Eddie Garcia, find out what's shaking the world of sports.
Well, Clay, you need to make good choices, and with TrueCar, you've got a star in your roster, so when you're ready to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar. TrueCash offers not available in all areas. Top 25 college basketball, we had 8 ranked teams in action. All but one of them were winners, including number one Gonzaga, who escaped with an 81-79 win over Washington thanks to a last-second shot. Third-ranked Duke beat Hartford 84-54. The one team that was ranked that lost was Nebraska, falling to Minnesota 85-78. Tough news from the NFL, where Denver Broncos top wide receiver Emmanuel Sanders suffered a torn Achilles tendon in practice. He's done for the rest of the season. The NHL season continues tonight with the Tampa Bay Lightning hosting the Boston Bruins at 7:30 Eastern. It's our Discover Card key matchup. Speaking of matchups, become a new card member. Discover Card will match all the cash back you've earned dollar for dollar at the end of your first year. Learn more at discover.com/match. Limitations apply. Back to Clay Travis in the Geico Outkick the Coverage studios.
All right, I want to start with you, Eddie. Genius or idiot on my Washington Redskins move if I were the owner?
Well, if those are my choices, I'm going to have to go idiot on that one. You want to sign Colin Kaepernick so you can get like a blank check to sign all the criminals in the NFL? I mean,
yeah.
That's what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I want undervalued assets. The way you, to me, the NFL is a hyper-competitive league. I believe that there are lots of guys out there that have clear talent and can play at a high level. Reuben Foster and Kareem Hunt among them, that you can get for pennies on the dollar. Colin Kaepernick might be one of them too. The way to succeed in the NFL is by finding undervalued assets and turning them into valued assets. And if you're a business person, to me, the reason why Kareem Hunt is not signed right now is entirely because owners don't want to get ripped for being too light for domestic violence. That's 100% the reason why Kareem Hunt is not playing in the NFL. If I could go get Colin Kaepernick, who I think is better than Mark Sanchez and probably better than Colt McCoy, and I can get him for a low amount and that allows me to get other undervalued assets, I'm going to do it. What about you, Danny G? Genius or idiot?
I'm still trying to decide. I think it's interesting, and this started with your conversation with Richard Sherman yesterday. I was scratching my head a little bit, wondering if you're just trying to set up your next book that you're going to title Felons Play Football 2. I understand where you're going with it, and I do think Kareem Hunt should get a second chance in the league, so it makes sense for the Redskins to sign him. Now, I don't think Kaepernick would want to come back because he's got way more to lose than he has to gain.
But that's fine. If the Redskins merely said, we tried to sign him and he refused to sign with us, we offered him $4 million to do it, then it kills Colin Kaepernick's storyline forever.
How about this for another option if the Kaepernick idea doesn't work out? We talked about Jameis Winston earlier in the show. If the Tampa Bay Bucks cut him, how about the Redskins sign him in the offseason? Then you'd have the all-abuse offense. Adrian Peterson, I beat my kid. Kareem Hunt, I kicked a woman. Jameis Winston, I grabbed a woman's crotch. You would have a great offense right there.
That's just a cynical, cynical statement. What about you, Dub? Genius or idiocy?
I mean, using the biggest, most recognizable name in football as a decoy, really, to sign some guys with shady character on the cheap, I mean, that's honestly a ploy I can get behind. I love it.
I think it's genius. I really do. And most of the people who are voting right now are saying that I'm a genius for this idea. Not necessarily that I'm a genius overall, that this idea is genius. There are, let's see, how many of you have voted so far? 10,000 of you have voted so far in the poll question. You can go vote at Clay Travis. 61% of you are saying I'm a genius. 39% of you are saying I'm an idiot. Final hour, Thursday edition. We're going to dive back in. Jags, Titans start the NFL's 13th game of the season Thursday night. What do we expect to see happen tonight? And how can I make you some money? I'll give you my gambling picks when we return. This is Outkick the Coverage. I'm a genius, I think. Maybe. Or maybe an idiot on Outkick.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Joined now by Ari Fleischer. He's former White House press secretary. And I'm excited to have him on today because, I don't know about you guys, but I watched the George H.W. Bush funeral yesterday in the Washington National Cathedral. And it was ennobling. It was spirit-lifting. It was, I think, representative of all of the best things about our American democracy and what it can represent. Ari, did you feel the same way watching it?
Oh, my gosh. It was stirring. You know, it's everything that you hope for in our country when you see people come together and hear speeches about principles and doing good and what they used to call noblesse oblige, just serving your country.
When you you know George W. Bush obviously very, very well,
yeah.
And he, in the wake of 9/11, had to do some very important and difficult and insanely emotional things on behalf of the country. Was this the most difficult, maybe emotional thing you can imagine, to have to eulogize not just your father, which I can't even imagine doing in general, but to have to eulogize your father on behalf of the country as well, because you were also a president, is a challenge, frankly, that I'm not sure anybody's ever had to take on before in a funeral-like setting.
You know, nobody's ever had to do it before. Of course, we've only had one other president whose father was president, and his father deceased him, and he predeceased him so when he was so young, he didn't have a chance. But, Clay, I think if you asked George W. Bush that question, he would tell you, he has to put it in two categories. One is the difficult emotional things he had to do for our country, and the other is for his family. And the two ran together in the Bush family, but I think he would tell you he can separate the two. I'll tell you, after September 11th, when he went to New York City on September 14th and stood in the pile and missed the firefighters and the policemen, that probably was the most emotional toughest day he had. In addition to calling families who lost loved ones and more, those were the most emotional times of his presidency, visiting with relatives who lost their family, loved ones. This is familial. This is his family. This is his dad. That's love. And there's love for country, love for your dad, and I think he would see it that way.
How big of sports fans were the Bushes in your experience? There's an iconic
huge
photo that I want to hit with to remind people as we talk about George H.W. Bush. He got to meet Babe Ruth when he was playing baseball at Yale. You talk about a guy who lived the length and breadth of the 20th century. What George H.W. Bush kind of was able to do, I mean, that photo of him shaking hands with Babe Ruth.
Yeah.
Sometimes politicians pretend to be sports fans because it helps them kind of get the common man image. You spent a lot of time around both. How big of fans were they? What kind of stories can you share?
No, shoot, George W. Bush owned the Texas Rangers before he became governor. I mean, that man knows box scorers and player personnel. We would travel abroad, and this is in the old days before there were Blackberries and international phones. We traveled abroad, and I'd have the Situation Room fax me abroad the Yankee box scores, because I'm a huge Yankee fan. The president saw me one day in a meeting with a foreign leader, and I was sneaking looks at the Yankees box score. And he said, "Where'd you get that?" And I told him I had the sit room, send it to me. Starting after that, he had the sit room sending him the Ranger box scores.
Oh, that is amazing. I always wonder about that because, you know, a lot of times when you're in, you know, serious events, you're debating or you're on the campaign trail or you're doing the State of the Union or whatever it is, sometimes that'll correspond with major sporting events. And I always want to, and sometimes you talk to, you know, entertainers or whatnot, and they're big fans, and they're like, hey, in between sets, I need an update on what the score is or how the game's going. Do you remember any particular times where you're given, you know, like the president, there's obviously serious things going on in life. That's a great one. You're getting Texas Ranger box scores, but you're also still just a regular guy in some respects, and you're trying to keep tabs on your favorite teams.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he would bust my chops because I only knew the players on the Yankees, and, you know, I didn't know who the, you know, second string shortstop was on the Orioles. He did, though. And so he bust my chops that I wasn't a real baseball fan. I mean, he loved it. He was into it. And the best thing of all, and I got to say, President Obama did the same thing. When he would leave, George W. would leave the West Wing at 6 o'clock at night and go back to the residence, he had this big binder of events for the next day, policy briefings, et cetera. And after dinner in the residence, he would watch SportsCenter and catch up on his events, flip through it. And I always loved that about him. He didn't watch all the cable news shows about politics. He'd just clear his mind and watch sports the way a lot of regular people do. And that was just him. And I think it's very healthy.
You mentioned 9/11, and what I would like to do, and we're talking with Ari Fleischer, former White House press secretary for George W. Bush, I'd like to get you on around 9/11 on a somewhat regular basis because you do one of the most amazing things that I think anybody does, which is to take advantage of social media. Every year you tweet the 9/11 experience, you know, kind of minute by minute. And I'm stunned now. I've got young kids, you know, and I feel like I'm getting older as well. It's amazing that it's now been, I'm sure it seems crazy to you, that it's been 17 years since 9/11 happened. I mean, nearly a generation has passed since that day. But how often do you still think about that day? How often do you still think about those moments in the immediate aftermath? And for people who maybe are young and driving into school this morning and haven't experienced it, take me into that day in particular as you could from the White House perspective.
Well, Clay, I think when you were at the White House and something like that happens, it'll always be a deep part of you. And, you know, the good thing about life and the good thing about our country is we do move on. And that's appropriate. And hopefully the government solves these problems. They don't come up again. And we're protected. And that was the job of the Bush White House to do that. And I think we did it. But, you know, I do that live tweeting. I recreate everything that happened on September 11th. I started by accident, frankly. I got a new iPhone. And I could take pictures and it was really easy to post them. And so I took a couple pictures of some things I had on my wall about September 11th. And I noticed there was huge interest in it. And the next year, I just formalized it and really walked through the day. And one of the reasons I will always keep doing it, it's very tiring, it's hard to do, but one of the reasons I'll keep doing it is because I've had school teachers tell me that they use it to teach their classes about history and what happened on September 11th. And if I can play some small part in letting people know how vivid, real, and tragic that day was, I'll do that.
During the ceremony yesterday and the tribute speeches and the eulogies, there was actually quite a few touching on sports moments. And I thought in particular golf and the way that George H.W. Bush played golf was kind of emblematic, many people said, of the way that he lived his life. And I'm sure you had experience before George W. Bush stopped playing golf, being around the Bush father and son, 41 and 43. What was their interaction like on a golf course type setting in the world of sports?
Oh, they were rivals. I mean, they were competitors. They would rib each other. The whole family loves to rib one another. George and Jeb, you know, George W. and Jeb. It's just that kind of good natured family fun. And as anybody who plays sports knows, sports lends itself to that, right? And that's the way they were. It was a wonderful escape from the serious business of government, and they took it seriously. They competed with each other and busted each other's chops.
What does Texas A&M mean to the Bush family? You know, obviously, Texas A&M, we got a lot of people listening to us right now in Texas. It's where George H.W. Bush is going to be interred. I was at the Johnny Manziel workout. And there's a huge media contingent, massive number of people who were there. And up rolling up in a golf cart comes George H.W. Bush and Barbara Bush. They were there to watch Johnny Manziel work out I don't know how many people even know that, but they were there on their golf cart watching Johnny Manziel work out for all of the scouts and all the media and everybody else who was there as he prepared for the NFL draft. That's how committed and kind of in bed with the Texas A&M University they were. I know they went to a lot of SEC football games as A&M joined that conference before that in the Big 12. What did A&M mean to the Bush family?
Well, and if I recall now, and I'm not certain about the facts on this, but as I recall, there were many places that competed to get the George H.W. Bush Library, and they chose Texas A&M. The exact reasons they chose it, I don't know. You know, I was not part of George H.W. Bush's administration or post-presidency, but there must be some type of connection that he had when he moved to Texas and then established himself in Texas, and his wife moved there, of course, too. So they had a connection to A&M, and of all the places, they chose A&M for their library. Now, where you put your library is very special to you when you're a former president. It's the place you'll be memorialized. It's the place people will go to see your story, to look at the records of your presidency, pictures, intimate moments, behind-the-scenes events, a recreation of the Oval Office. All of that is part of these modern-day libraries. They put it at A&M. And, of course, that's where Mrs. Bush, the First Lady, is buried. Their daughter Robin is buried there. And that's where President George H.W. Bush will be interred today.
Last question for you. I know you're a busy guy, and I want to get you on again maybe even get you in studio sometime and talk to you in a longer form. This is Ari Fleischer, former White House press secretary. He does a ton of different things for a ton of different clients now, but I thought in particular with George H.W. Bush and the ceremony they had yesterday, it's perfect timing to bring him on and talk a little bit about that. Can you imagine being White House press secretary now in a social media age? You know, there's no way. It doesn't even matter who the president is, but just in the social media age, obviously Trump changes everything, but you've been up there answering questions for media, and the way that the story has changed in terms of the White House press briefing with social media, it's a different universe, right?
Well, I can't imagine ever being White House press secretary again. I would leave it at that, regardless of whatever the age is. I spent 21 wonderful years in Washington, culminated in the White House, and I loved it. I loved every minute of it. But, you know, my time came, it went, and time to go, and I'm back in New York, and I run a sports communications company. But, you know, Clay, here's the thing. In every era, you get used to and you adapt to whatever your era is marked by. So this is an era marked by social media. And you communicate by social media. That's how you get your message out. There may be an era 20 years from now where it's something totally different, and the new people will adapt to that era as well. Change is part of America, and you just roll with it. You master it. You get good at it, hopefully. And if you're in the communications field, you communicate through it.
I know,
so
I said
no, not for me, but yes for others.
I know I said last question, but I want to give you an out on this, because I do think there are a lot of people reflecting upon George H.W. Bush today and yesterday and all this week, and certainly also George W. Bush in the wake of the eulogy and everything else. What in your mind did the Bushes mean, and do they mean, obviously, because George W. Bush is still alive, for the country as a whole?
Dignity. Dignity, principle, nation first, and family love. You know, George W. Bush and his father would speak regularly. And I was constantly asked, both as press secretary, and I visit with the former president now a lot in his post-presidency, and people say still to him, you know, what did you and your father talk about? Did he give you advice on the world stage? And his answer was always no. He gave me unconditional love. And that's what they would talk about, the family, who's doing what. And it would always end with his father saying, I love you, and him saying, I love you back. And that was the Bushes to me. And it's kind of an old-fashioned Americana. It's a great part of America. And I hope everybody in their family has a bit of that. I hope they have a lot of that. That's what the Bushes had.
Ari Fleischer, outstanding stuff. I know it's a busy time, as always, for you. We need to get you on again, but the timing today was absolutely perfect. At Ari Fleischer, go follow him on Twitter. Appreciate it, my man.
Thank you, Clay.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Joel Klatt joins us now. If you follow him on Twitter or you follow me on Twitter, you saw him coming after me aggressively on Twitter. First question, how much do you hate me, Joel?
Oh, my gosh. You know, because we're friends, I hate you so much.
It's always funny.
I mean, when in particular about this subject, like I hate you a lot with this subject, which is why, you know, you used to, you know, say like, hey, I'm just out here murdering people on Twitter. I mean, you got murdered the other day.
What's funny is I was live on the air, right? So I'm doing live radio.
Which is even better.
Yeah, right. So I just look down at my phone and I see that suddenly I have like 1,000 notifications. And I'm like, oh God, you know, like what did I do this time, right? Because before, one of the things that's funny about Twitter in general, and you'll have experienced this a little bit, like people went back through like all my old tweets once when I said like that DeMarcus Cousins was going to get arrested. Like, you know, a decade ago I said that when he got a couple of technical fouls. And so I'm out at the Super Bowl in Phoenix, and I go to bed, turn my phone, you know, to the side, and then I sleep in till like 8 a.m. because I was out that night at the Super Bowl or whatever. 8 a.m. on the, you know, West Coast is 11 a.m. on the East Coast, and I look over at my phone, and I've got like 12,000 notifications. And I was like, oh my God. Like, what? How? Like, I didn't even want to pick up my phone. I was like, because I was like, what did I tweet? Like, I didn't think I tweeted anything, right? I was like, I was like, what did I say that was controversial? Like, what did I do? And it was people going back through those old tweets. So, like, I'm like, what in the world? Like, why am I getting all these notifications now? And then I see that it's you teeing off on me over the Urban Meyer news. So let's start with the Urban Meyer news. Were you surprised that Urban Meyer stepped down? You just called the Ohio State Michigan, and you just called Ohio State against Northwestern. Did you anticipate this happening?
I did anticipate it. And in fact, before Michigan, he had kind of mentioned to Gus and I that he was leaning this direction. He asked us to keep it under our hat, which we did, just because, you know, I don't feel like it's our place to break news like that, in particular at his behest. So we kept it under his hat because he hadn't told his team yet. I don't think he had made his final decision yet. But after those two games went the way that they did, I think that he felt like this was the right time. And I don't think that there was any one factor. I think that, you know, and I know you have sat more on his health. I think that is a factor, Clay, and I think that there are several others. I think that the handling of what happened this offseason is a factor. I think it's also a factor that he sees what happened at Oklahoma with Bob Stoops, and he saw Bob be able to kind of ride off into the sunset because he had a successor in place in Lincoln Riley, and I think he wants Ohio State to continue on that trajectory, which is what didn't happen for Florida after he left. And he sees Ryan Day, and he knows that they're going to probably lose him if he stays another year. So he decides that now's the time. I think every one of those factors played a part. I just don't know to what extent.
Do you believe that he will ever coach again? He says that he does not think he will. I believe that he will. Do you believe that he will?
You know, he's so intense, and he loves it so much. I think that it's going to be really tough for him not to. However, I do believe that he feels in his heart right now that he won't. Now, whether he does or doesn't, I don't think makes it, you know, any worse to say that right now or not. But I do believe that it's going to be really difficult for him because he is young enough. I will tell you that he has told me that the pain in his head is real, and that it's becoming really difficult to deal with. Now, you know, take from that what you will, but he says it's onset by when he gets angry and when he yells, which is why he gets so exasperated and rubs his face in his temples and bends over on the sideline, and you get kind of see all of that stuff. He's an emotional guy, and he says that his head is killing him, and he doesn't know if he can or will, you know, want to do this for much longer.
We're talking to Joel Klatt. All right, the college football playoff has been set. Number one, Alabama. Number two, Clemson. Number three, Notre Dame. Number four, Oklahoma. How insane with rage would you have been if Georgia had gotten into the playoff?
Well, I mean, I would have been frustrated, but I felt like the committee was likely to do anything because they have no criteria. That's the problem, right? So, I mean... I don't think that it would have been right, but I wouldn't have put it past them because they have outs and loopholes to do almost anything that they want to do. They can cook the books from the rankings from 5 to 25. They can do whatever they want to do and justify it however they want to justify it. I did think that this is the route that they were going to go because they have seemed to have drawn a line at the two loss, you know, metric. And I think that there was a lot of pressure from the commissioners onto the committee to start to honor conference championships after the last couple of years. I think these commissioners understand that that game is being devalued. And one of the reasons, one of the only reasons, candidly, Clay, that we still have a 4-team playoff and not an 8-team playoff is because these commissioners, probably namely Greg Sankey and Jim Delaney, want to continue to have the value in what they deem as very valuable championship games, conference championship games. Well, as those begin to be devalued, I think we're going to start to get closer and closer to the 8-team playoff because I think these guys will start to realize that they're leaving more money on the table by playing conference championship games rather than that weekend of the season playing a quarterfinal week with 8 teams.
It's funny, you'll appreciate this. I was sitting with my 10-year-old, and we were watching the 74-72 Texas A&M LSU game. And he said, "Dad, you know, like, have you ever seen a game like this?" And I was like, "Well, you know, yeah, I've watched some overtime games that have gone this long." But I said, "You know, college football games used to end in a tie." And he was like, "What? They ended in ties?" And then he said, "Well, what would they do if you had two teams and they were playing like for the championship and they ended in a tie? Like, you would have two champions." And I said, "Well, let me tell you something, kid. We used to have multiple champions and they didn't even play. You would just vote on who you thought was the best team." And you should have seen his face. He was like, I mean, it was like I had just told him he had to eat broccoli for dinner for the rest of his life. He was like, "What? Why did you even like this sport, Dad?" You know? And
you
so,
know, it's like that analogy that you say whenever they see someone smoking. They're
yes,
like, what?
Yes, that's
what
exactly right.
Happening?
That's how my kids react when they see somebody smoking now. It's exactly right. And so, like the world, his world was just like in disbelief. Do you believe that in a decade we will have an 8-team playoff, and the whole like history of the BCS and like the multiple champions and everything else will seem as ludicrous to other kids who are just now being born as the idea that there used to be ties in college football and multiple champions seem to my 10-year-old son now?
I think that we will, and I don't think it's going to take 10 years. I think that the biggest sticking point, and this probably is going to – there's I think, two major sticking points. One is, if it's not broke from the SEC's perspective, why fix it?
Yeah.
Right? They're going to be, you know, people are going to argue for them to get two of the four every year. So for them, it's kind of like, well, why would in the world we have a value championship game? We get two, one team in regardless. Why in the world would we want to change this? You know, this is working for us. And that's understandable. And then on the other side of this, it is the Pac-12, Big Ten direct tie to the Rose Bowl. Those two conferences and their tie to that game, I think, is the number one factor why the sport cannot move all that nimbly. But I think that Jim Delaney is starting to come off of that position just a little bit. Remember, this is going to be the third straight year that his champion is not going to be in the playoff. So I think that you're going to start to see some movement. I personally believe that within 5 or 6 years we're going to see an 8-team playoff. And in large part, it's not going to be a sentimental thing or this is what we should do. It's going to be because our executives at Fox and the executives at ESPN are going to get into a room and they're going to show the powers that be in college football. They're going to show them the revenue that they're leaving on the table, the revenue that we would pay them to have another four games in a quarterfinal weekend, and those commissioners are going to look at that and be like, "Oh man, we got to do this," and they're going to get much more rich than they already are.
I love the idea of the 8-team playoff. Last question for you: I hate divisions in college football. I think they are nonsensical in the ACC, the SEC, the Pac-12, and the Big Ten. You're getting the indication maybe the Big Ten doesn't necessarily think they make much sense either.
Yeah, I'm starting to get that, and I'm starting to get that from a couple of conferences, especially when, and again, it goes to, it all speaks to value. I think that we talk about the sport and sentimental prospects way too much. We talk about it from a reasoned standpoint and a reasonable standpoint, when often the only thing that's ever going to change things is money. And when you start to devalue properties by having what we would deem as an unfair matchup, or you get a team into the championship game that people are not excited about because they've got 3 and 4 losses, what happens is that you devalue those properties. And so I think what you're starting to see now is people watch the Big 12's model play out, and they see how valuable that game is becoming and how good that game is, and they're starting to say, well, if we're going to play that, why don't we pit our top two teams against one another? Now, they might have to shuffle the schedule a little bit so that you wouldn't get, let's say, in the Big Ten, of Michigan, Ohio State back-to-back weeks.
Yep. No, that is outstanding stuff, as always, from Joel Klatt. Go follow him on Twitter, at Joel Klatt.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis, weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.